I think a lot of opportunity will come from the challenges that will present themselves in media in general. With AI, misinformation, disinformation, some of the devolving legacy media approaches, I think it's going to create a lot of opportunities for folks like Workweek and 6AM and Beehive and everybody else that's out there playing in the space. I think that we're going to continue to see folks strive to connect and deliver attribution that works for advertisers. And the folks who can really figure out how to deliver that are going to capture that market share. And I think you'll start to see a few folks expeditiously grow.
Welcome to Perpetual, where you'll get the hottest takes and insights on what's happening in the constantly shifting world of media and marketing. I'm Adam Ryan. Let's go.
Ryan, welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Excited to be here, Adam.
It's a little bit different of a relationship. I think out of all the guests, you and I might have talked more than most because of my relationship being on the board the last couple of years at 6AM, but I'm excited to flip the script a little bit and have a deep dive into some of the tactics.
Sounds good. Ready for it.
So for everyone kind of listening, getting to know 6AM, you all are going after local, your newsletter kind of centric, I would call it. And, you know, you're in 20 plus ish areas. But when I think about local, we've had John on from Community Impact. I've talked to State Affairs, and that's like a little bit of a local spin. I think your editorial strategy is really what's like your difference. Tell us a little bit about that and how you guys got there.
When we started, we were a product innovation of a legacy print media company. And as a business, one of the things that legacy struggled with was how to get into digital space when you're a smaller, like independent publisher. And we evaluated the opportunity to step into digital in a way that was beyond our own content. How do we curate the best of what's out there in the market? And then said, hey, how do we differentiate ourselves? And one of the things that was growing in popularity was divisiveness in local media, or just media in general. And as we saw that as a challenge for the local newspaper and TV stations whose content was around car accidents and homicides and assaults and all this other stuff, really wasn't inspiring to start your day. And our passion was around economic development in the community. So we said, hey, no politics, no crime and punishment, no divisive topics. And at the time, we didn't realize, this is about 2016, that we were creating a brand safe environment. That term wasn't really in our back pocket yet. We really hadn't even started selling anything. And so we really created this local economic engine through our newsletters that delivered a brand safe environment that allowed us to capture a sustainable local revenue source behind just positive community impact news and events.
The brand safe piece obviously pays off with advertisers in like a really big way, but there's also like this just like positive sentiment around 6AM when you read it. And there's like this like pride that you have. And it's like one of the key things that you guys talk about. When you think about success of editorial strategy and having people build pride in the city, when we close our eyes and think about the vision of 6AM, how do you capitalize on that pride that you're creating?
We call it pride in place in our markets. And the folks who are consuming our product, we call them like super locals. They're actively involved in the community. They're the ones that are first in line when the new restaurant opens. They're out there shopping at the local coffee shop. So regardless of their economic standing, they're active participants in the community. And for us, that allows us, one, the ability to monetize those folks because our local advertisers, regional and national, care about them. They're more engaged in our product, which drives better conversion on sales. But there's also a bigger opportunity to increase the LTV of those subscribers over time. While they may participate initially as a consumer and we provide our newsletter product for free, they're more likely to drive purchase intent based on our advertisers and purchase intent around other e-commerce affiliates, membership, and other revenue streams that we put in front of them. So they're very much driven by our recommendations and look to us as a social influencer or community influencer through the brand. And with that relationship and trust that we've built has been really, really rewarding for both us and the consumer.
When you think about the dynamics then of building this editorial strategy to reach that vision, How have you tactically, you guys have expanded really fast. It's without a doubt, you know, there's Axios Local and then you all, and in that fight of growth, I think is pretty well documented. But, you know, this is a logistics business. It's a complicated logistics operational business. And I've told people this publicly, I would never get into local because I don't think I have the skill set to manage it. How have you guys kind of logistically built the machine to expand these new cities?
When we started this business, I actually had no background in anything editorial, journalism related. And I come from an aerospace operations logistics background, quality systems. And so from day one, we really designed a highly efficient, scalable model. We always wanted to take our local Greenville, South Carolina market and go to a couple markets around us. And so when I met up with Ryan Johnston, my co-founder and CEO of the company, he had this vision for this local newsletter product that we were going to take to all these different markets. And I had this operational skill and efficiency that said, hey, two people per city, let's create a playbook. How is this going to ramp? And we can hit, you know, $1 million in revenue per market, but have our operating costs be, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars. And you hit this 60-70% margin in each city, and then you can replicate it and replicate it and replicate it. So creating that hub and spoke model for management and then having boots on the ground editors in the market. And so we kind of created this low cost operating structure, scalable content approaches that you test something in one city and then you can replicate it in another market. And so we were able to create scalable earned content, scalable paid content, scalable sales strategy. And that's allowed us, even to this day, we have 130 employees. The majority are editorial in market or sales in market, and a very limited centralized overhead structure that supports that business. So it allows the profit margin in the individual cities to be much higher and more sustainable long term. And now how do we drive that up even more?
I think that's like an amazing insight on the kind of editorial front. With the two folks, you try to find them local to the city where they like live and breathe it. Does it matter where they're at? How do you kind of think about that?
We've had some really interesting learnings around that over the years. When we first started, we were going for the local newspaper journalist, and that's proven actually not to be the best approach. We find that a lot of folks who have a more of a marketing background are better at helping sell the city and sell their stories and getting people to want to participate in the community versus just talking at the consumer. So it creates better engaged content. So typically we have maybe one person more journalistic leaning and one person more marketing leaning in that team. And then one person from the city that understands it from their experience and time there. And many times one person who's new or newer to the market that exudes curiosity and wants to know what's all going on. And the person who's been there for 10 years is like, oh my God, you're just bringing, like, I didn't realize that. And that's the same thing that the consumers are feeling. Wow, I had no idea the history of that bridge downtown and all this background and stuff. But that newer person brought that additional curiosity to the market that also resonates with our readership, as a lot of our folks are moving around different parts of the country. And this is where, like, their first stop shop for how to get plugged in and enjoy their community.
It definitely feels like you've kind of like balanced that. It's a little bit of marketing because like there's no politics or of that nature. And so I think that's a unique placement as well. How, when you think about staffing the sales team, I know you guys have kind of done this like more regional play. There's other local folks when, you know, their top customers are typically like real estate, healthcare, hospital systems. You all have had a national play as well. Talk a little bit about the lessons and learnings you've had around the sales side.
We had not hired salespeople early enough in the business. Once we had established some markets, we were definitely a little late to the game. But once we figured out what the right person was and how we were going to really ramp sales, we leaned in into when we had seven cities. Problem is, we never had a one-to-one ratio salesperson in a market or salesperson per market, and we were diluting one person focused on two cities or three cities, and that has proven to not be the right equation. You need at least 0.75 to one salesperson per market in order to really hit that higher profit margin in the community. We've learned that they don't need to be geolocated in the actual markets over the years, and that we can do a lot of virtual and remote selling, especially as a lot of the bigger brands have agencies that aren't even in the city anyways. And so our biggest wins have been in regional advertisers. So a grocery store that's across 8 cities, a bank that's across 8 cities, and you get that buy. So we're able to cover it with a more of a one-to-one sales staff. I think today we have about 22 sales staff against 27 markets. And those folks are able to deliver very meaningful revenue. It takes a while though. Anyone who starts in local and thinks that they're going to like print $1 million in year one is kidding themselves. Even with the level of infrastructure that we've created and the sales platform materials, training, resources, cross-market selling, I mean, you're talking year one, you might do $150,000 to $300,000 maybe with a very aggressive strategy. But it takes 2 to 3 years to really mature a market if you're going grassroots and like really building those local and regional relationships. So you got to really be kind of committed to it. But we've gotten it to a point now where on the momentum of the growth, we're actually able to go in and be profitable day one by pre-selling markets and being recruited to cities. So, but it took 7 years to get there.
That's that good experience of helping out, helping decision-making today. Back in October when Workweek turned two, I talked a little bit about on Twitter why we started to divest from a couple of the brands we worked with. And when I was on the board and talking with you, I always saw like unique comparisons. Workweek's model is like totally different. And B2B is totally different. But like the reality is, you know, I kind of was doing these like sub brands with the platform, and you were doing that as kind of how we could support and help each other. How do you think about success of a city versus stepping away from a city? How fast do you have to make that decision? Because I feel like that's the thing. If someone's listening to this, it feels so easy. It's like, oh, let's just go. But like the real hard part is actually deciding like when, hey, the city's just like not best. And the same thing that we had to kind of do with our own verticals. What kind of goes into that?
For us, we've gotten to a point now where we know the unit economics of a market pretty robustly, where we can say that this is the actual milestone to get break even and be strongly profitable. We used to not really know that. Not nearly as well as we do today. And so a lot of times in the past, we probably hung on to some things longer than we should have. And we also overexpanded. So there's a few parts to the formula. The first is understanding what the right audience size, sales staffing, et cetera, yields a profitable market, and staffing it and investing in it properly in the beginning. So we've learned now, if we actually approach it in the right way and truly invest in the audience on the front end and invest in the salesperson at the right time and ramp up our editorial team, we can achieve profitability much faster. If that is not working and not following the formula that we have now really created, then it makes sense to divest pretty immediately. However, we're not launching markets that we don't have pre-booked profitable revenue at the moment. But on the flip side, the ones that we did over, we went into like 16 new markets at the same time. And that was a crazy burn to go through that exercise. And so we didn't afford the opportunity to put the true investment into some of those markets. And then we've really fought to retain them all at our own loss, but keep them all and try to get them to maturity. But some markets, you're just not going to be able to align the sales team or be able to afford or hire them. There are definitely differences we've learned in different geos across the country in cost of doing business. It's a lot more effective in the Southeast and a lot less expensive than on the West Coast, for example.
You see the same things with like, you know, from a CPM basis in franchising is way different than HR, right? And so like we still have brands, I love all of them, right? But they're just like different and they have to be treated differently. And the takeaway of watching you all go, which is like, I think anybody, what I love about you and the Ryans in general, both of you, is like the ambition was just massive. And you took that ambition to reality with 16 markets launched in basically 12 months, which was like certifiably insane. But the thing that now I think we all agree on, and we, you know, Workweek did 11 new verticals in 12 months, and I would never do that again either, is like, if you actually do like five really, really well and invest in them really well, you actually can compound that growth like way faster versus like the hit rate and loss. And that's probably one of the biggest takeaways that I think you've probably learned and as well.
100%. We're doing 3 to 4 together right now. And that is a very manageable number. We are able to deploy the capital towards audience development effectively. We're able to manage the relationship, manage the onboarding training. Like, without breaking the system, you are much easier to focus on that. We've also divested from just random initiatives. There's a lot you can do to be more like efficient in your business processes. But we also just were trying too many wild, crazy ideas. And while they're fun to try all these different things, we weren't necessarily evaluating the ROIs that directly related to aligning with our core audience and revenue potential. So we're out there testing some like TikTok strategy that's just not in our wheelhouse and get like 6 people messing around with it. We were never going to go anywhere with the TikTok strategy. I mean, it's great to play with and we learned a lot, but it was a distraction from other opportunities to be more relevant in the core product and to lean into our core audience better, which helps you monetize and be more sustainable. So we've dialed back to a more manageable, true focus on product innovation and opportunities, empowering our editorial staff, and then really focus on scaling the innovation within the editorial product.
The aspect of balancing innovation with profitability and also then doing things that you already know how to do, but net new, which still come with its own issues, like new cities. You mentioned, you know, it was our loss to keep those. You mentioned kind of like the payback periods, sounds like, or like 2-3 years for these. You just announced a partnership with Tegna. Tell everyone a little bit about why that makes so much sense for you all and kind of what went into that decision.
There's a lot of things in local media. Not everything in local media we are experts at. We don't cover sports. That requires a whole separate set of individuals to get into sports. We don't have a broadcast distribution. We don't have as much reach and brand awareness as a legacy print newspaper or TV station has. And so when you can align yourself with someone that's going to maximize the reach, and we can participate with a brand like Tegna and be integrated on their homepage, getting millions and millions of page views every single month, and directly link back to our content, drive SEO relevance, drive affiliate revenue, manage their newsletters, ad revenue side of the business, and rev share opportunities to grow with these partners. Those are types of things where we can really lean in and build an opportunity to scale. Looking at how they've got 200 sports podcasts. How do we complement that business line? So there's a lot of strategic benefit with a broadcast partner and someone who's in sports and OTT and other streaming opportunities for us to maybe figure out how to take the business model that we have right now and extend our reach, extend our financial opportunity without doing a whole ton of additional work.
The connections around the sports, local, supporting them, you know, there's a lot of correlation to what Axios had with Cox as an investment, and then later kind of doing a deeper dive in. When, you know, I very happily served a couple of years on the board. Now you're building that out. The Tegna has, I think, 2 spots on there. But what I was most excited about part of that was you, as someone who was media naive, which I think are like the best media founders today because it needs to be new. You now get to learn from people that have run a $1 billion business. What have you already learned from that group when it comes to local that you necessarily didn't know before that partnership?
I think we had a lot of things reaffirmed more so than anything else. I mean, local's hard. Local's hard in a lot of different ways. And a lot of folks that are in local media, specifically on the broadcast, I mean, they watch the similar trends that happened with print newspaper side of the business. And you have to think about how will TV be affected over the coming years and how are they being innovative to protect against that? And we've learned that folks like Tegna and others are leaning into opportunities to partner with folks like 6AM City or Lockdown Podcasts. And, you know, how do you really get into expanding and diversifying your reach meeting your audience where they are, expanding your audience. A lot of the folks who consume a broadcast TV media is a set demographic, and that's not your whole community. And so how do you kind of make sure that you're positioned to best continue to communicate? And then everyone's going to try to address, we really learned that a lot of them are trying to address the same challenges of zero and first party data, having that direct relationship with the consumer. And you don't get that in the same way with some of the legacy approaches to media. And so newsletters deliver that. And we are seeing a massive opportunity to complement stuff that's been there for a long time. And I think that we're seeing and hearing that from not just Tegna, but other parties that we've communicated with, that there's a big opportunity. And the ones who are going to step up and innovate and lead are probably going to be the ones that'll win.
It's a really good counterbalance. I also think it's meeting the consumer's needs, right? Like, I think there are diehard people who don't give a shit about local, but they do love their sports teams. And then there's other people that, like, my mom loves watching the crime, you know, nightly news situation. That's like her thing. And then there's other people that just only want, hey, I just like want to learn about my city and have that. And so having somebody kind of like help facilitate all those needs of the consumers, I think matches pretty well. When you kind of are starting to have these conversations, you guys have done really well with press and that. It's one of the things that I think I admire most about you all is the information named you most innovative media company last year, two steps ahead of Workweek. Sarah Fisher covers you in Axios quite a bit. For the folks that are just kind of getting started, right? Like, imagine you 4, 5, 6 years ago. What advice do you have around like actually capturing PR? Because I think, in my opinion, besides running a good business that's innovative and ambitious, that helped a lot with like finding strategic partnerships, because it, like, your name's out there, people are familiar with it. You're at least the first one they look at now versus having to do a deep search. What's some advice you have on trying to kind of like do well in the press while being a media company?
In the beginning, it was all manual. So don't hire a PR firm. And we really leaned into making the direct connections with all the brands and the leaders that were reporting on our space directly. And to this day, we maintain those same relationships with the key folks who report and cover on our industry. We don't believe in press releases at our company. Like, we send them from here and there when it maybe makes sense because something big happened. But for the most part, it's direct human relationships with the people who report on our space, supporting their businesses, becoming a pro member, subscriber to someone who's writing about your industry. And that's gone a long way for us. Everything from revenue opportunities to PR opportunities, and a lot of other strategic relationships as well.
The relationship side, I think, you know, you do such a great job of that. You're in Jacob Donnelly's community. I know you reach out to stay close with Axios team. There's all that. And I think the kind of advice there is like, don't be afraid to try to do that, even if you're not known yet. That's like totally okay and acceptable, even if you're a first-time media entrepreneur that lives in South Carolina.
Yeah, we definitely didn't have a lot of local mentors in the space. We were kind of forced out of that box and had to go look for the relationships, which I think was probably a rewarding, important part of it. Our door is always open. We meet with people all the time to share best practices. I found the industry and folks who are in this more modern space and in newsletters to be very open and share lessons learned. I think there is a desire to win together. And I've been pretty excited about the traction and relationships that we've built over the years.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think you guys have just done such a great job. I think local is something that most people have no interest in. There's like a little interest in like local business. But when you think about like building pride in place in your city, so many people are just shying away from that. And you all have leaned into it. You've proven that you can build a really good business, employ 130 people, be recognized by Tegna and some of the leading companies. And it's really quite impressive. I think your hair has gotten a little grayer in the last few years since I've known you, but that could be the baby as well.
The top is a lot thinner too. We might be crazy, but we stepped into local and media, and those are like two impossible places. However, when we stepped into it, I think our timing was right by accident, in that people live locally. People are always going to live locally. Local media was rapidly evolving or devolving. More content creators were coming to the table, and we happened to find ourselves landing in a place where we could curate all the great stuff in a community, present and package that information back to our audience, inspire them to participate and spend their time, talent, and treasure locally. And it's been a rewarding journey.
I think it's awesome. You guys are making a huge impact, and we'll continue to do so. The final kind of question I always have around this podcast is, and it's somewhat impossible, but everyone's perspective is kind of interesting to hear. But if we close our eyes for 5 years from now, media landscape's perpetually changing, hence the podcast name. What changes are happening in this industry that gets you most excited over the next 5 years?
I think a lot of opportunity will come from the challenges that will present themselves in media in general. With AI, misinformation, disinformation, some of the devolving legacy media approaches, I think it's going to create a lot of opportunities for folks like Workweek and 6AM and Beehive and everybody else that's out there playing in the space. I think that we're going to continue to see folks strive to connect and deliver attribution that works for advertisers. And the folks who can really figure out how to deliver that are going to capture that market share. And I think you'll start to see a few folks expeditiously grow. And you'll probably see other people fall off. There's been a lot of people hopping into media that have been inspired by grant-based programs and other things that have got them to step in. And I think some of that stuff will get consolidated. And I think that we'll continue to see some level of roll-up. But a few of the folks who are at the table right now are really building their own footprint and have a big opportunity to start pulling others along with them and build maybe the next great media company.
I love it. I agree with it. And couldn't be more excited for you and Ryan. Congrats on the Tegna deal. Also battling through COVID, everything that you went through, advertising pullback, and still doing it with a model that's innovative and new and doing it as a first-time media entrepreneur. It's incredibly impressive, and I think a lot of people have a lot to learn from you. For now, until next time, Ryan, we will talk soon.
Thanks, Adam. We appreciate your support.
Thanks for listening. If you want deep insight and hot takes on the world of media, make sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend. I'll see you next time.